Hello, and welcome to The Staffing Show, the only podcast that delivers tools, tips, and tactics from the staffing and recruiting industry's top executives and thought leaders.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Staffing Referrals. At Staffing Referrals, we understand the challenges your agency faces every day. From finding high-quality candidates and clients to automating your recruitment process, our platform is designed to help you grow your agency faster. Imagine a world where your agency can automatically build your talent community, improve your recruiter's productivity, and automate manual processes, all the while improving the candidate experience. But don't just take our word for it. Here's what a few satisfied customers have to say. Our referral program boomed after partnering with Staffing Referrals. The technology allows us the tracking, communication, and reporting our traditional referral program desperately needed to unify and expand. Can't imagine our business without it. Are you ready to transform your staffing agency? Let's reduce your dependency on job boards. Deliver the experience your candidates expect from a modern business and turn your talent pool into a competitive advantage. Visit staffingreferrals.com and get ready to grow.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another episode of The Staffing Show. Today, I'm super excited to be joined by Kerry Daniel, the co-founder and CEO of NextStaff, one of the more innovative franchise models in staffing, and somebody who's really trying to reinvent the franchise model and has a handful of new concepts that we're going to be talking about and exciting things that are going on in staffing. Kerry, super excited to have you on the show today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
You've been on the show before, so there's some people that already know who you are. But for those that don't, I always like to start off with a quick background. Tell us a little bit about how you got in staffing and a little bit about NextStaff, and then we'll jump into the questions.
Sure. It's a long story of how I got in there, so I will try and be as brief as I can. But I always tell people I was coerced into getting into this industry. People think they kind of stumble into it. I was kind of coerced. It was back in the mid-90s when LaborReady had just gone public, and I had a few friends working there, and they were trying to get me over. And I was, you know, my interview, I was sitting in a plastic chair, and the guy interviewing me, I think, had a dip of skull in his mouth. And I was like, this is weird. I'm not work for this place. This is bizarre. And they just twisted my arm. They're like, no, you don't understand. It's industry's growing. This company's growing. You really got to try it. And so I reluctantly got into staffing and been here ever since. So was with LaborReady for about 3 years, moved on to another company, which immediately was SOS Staffing, essentially, when I started. And then after a year of doing that, decided to get out on my own in about 1999. And something I would never recommend anybody doing, which is open 10 offices in 18 months, and sold that in 2003, and decided to franchise the concept. So we started NextStaff in 2004, and we did that for a number of years, ended up buying a PEO and a payroll company during the recession era, ran that up until about 2015. And exited that. It's now part of Paychex, and began kind of revitalizing the franchise model in 2018. So here today we are in 2025, 25 locations in 20 plus states, and we do commercial, healthcare, and technology verticals.
Great background. I know we've dug into the franchise model and some of the challenges with it, the exciting things around it, and what you guys are doing, and some of the unique opportunities. You guys have some pretty cool things going on in terms of how you're looking at franchising. To start, I'd love to know, what are some of the things that you think are kind of broken with the traditional model when it comes to a franchise model?
The easy one that comes to mind is the way that franchises are traditionally sold is by territory. And there's nothing, in my opinion, there's nothing inherently wrong with that. But if you look at some of the older models that have been around for a long time, they mirrored the way the staffing industry was back in the 90s, right? Back in the 90s, everybody came to your office for an application. And back in those days, you had to cut hard checks. And so everybody had to come to your location to get their paycheck. Therefore, in a traditional, let's say, top 25 city, you might have 5-6 locations scattered throughout the city, because somebody's not going to drive 40 minutes every day or every Friday to come pick up their check, or 40 minutes to come fill out an application. So you had all these locations scattered throughout a metropolitan area. And that's the way the traditional franchise model in staffing really evolved. When we came on in 2004, it was still somewhat the same, but we decided to expand it. You didn't need quite as much. You know, we were doing a lot more direct deposit at that time. And so, you know, we started doing stuff by county originally. And I'd say doing it that way, it was a benefit to us because it brought a lot of people in that thought some of the other concepts might be a little too restrictive. And then if you fast forward to today, now we start getting into virtual model and no territory restrictions, et cetera, which is like blasphemy, I think, in the franchise world. People can't comprehend that they're not getting a protected territory. And I say that not from the inquiries we get, but from, we call them brokers, but they like to be called consultants or coaches, you know, people that help others find a franchise. That's totally bizarre.
That's interesting. So the people that are selling it, it's breaking their model.
Maybe you've worked for T-Mobile for 20 years selling commercial accounts. You want to do something B2B, you want to use your sales, but you're not going to start your own telecom company.
Yep.
And so they go to a coach, broker, advisor, whatever, and say, hey, I've got this skill set. I want to own my own business. I want to do a franchise, but I don't know what I want to do. And they say, well, what about staffing? And so, you know, probably 50 to 60% of our, maybe even 75% of our leads have no background in staffing.
And that's amazing. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. I'd say the majority of the broker consultant leads we get do not have that background. Because if you live in the, think about it, it makes sense. If you come from staffing and you're thinking, I want to go out and open my own business, staffing would occur to you.
Yeah.
You would probably reach out to.
Oh, coming to the broker side of it. Yeah. 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 I mean, one of the things that when you and I had this first conversation around it and the concept, I was just thinking about how many probably incredible recruiters there are out there that are like, oh, I would love to, got the skill set, but I don't have the admin, the office manager, the payroll components of this. So how do I start my own business? And it kind of sounds like this concept of a virtual franchise solves for that. Is that the idea?
Yeah, you've got it. And it evolved post-COVID. So prior to COVID, we were like everybody else. You had a protected territory. However, ours were typically much larger.
Yeah.
Healthcare and technology, I mean, we would give you the entire MSA for those verticals. Commercial, it was typically the county. Post-COVID, the number of inquiries that we started receiving that were asking about a virtual model or home-based model really increased. And for probably a couple of years, we were kind of in the same mindset that everybody else in the industry was in, that no, that's not the way that franchising works. We don't do it that way.
Yeah.
After a couple of years of turning people away, and I'm talking super talented people.
Yeah.
We had one in technology that, I mean, to this day, I wish I could go back in time because she was a superstar. And
yeah.
She's like, well, that's not going to work in technology. I can't be restricted to this MSA. I understand it's a big MSA, but I can't be restricted with my clients. I mean, I have stuff all over the country. We're like, sorry, that's just not the way the franchise model works.
Yeah.
And after hearing yourself say that over and over, you're like, wait a minute.
Why?
Why does it matter? Especially in technology and even so in healthcare. So we sat down at one of our, you know, we're big EOS guys. And so we sat down at our annual offsite and we just picked it apart and said, why are the reasons why we should and what are the reasons why we can't? And that list on the can'ts were really never done it before. Not it's yeah. impossible, but it's yep. just we've just never done it before. And so we were able to roll out that virtual model in the healthcare and in the technology space about June of this year. And it reduces that, you know, the big concern of somebody starting their own thing is, you know, a lot of these folks, they have the confidence from their previous experience, but they're getting into something new. And it's that fear of, am I going to flush 10%, 90% of my net worth down the toilet getting into something new? So that it's a big fear component.
Yeah.
And what a virtual model does is it removes essentially most of the top objections we would get.
And that's amazing.
You don't have to sign a long-term lease. You don't have to hire full-time people day one. We cut your startup costs from entry level from $124,000 down to $61,000.
Wow.
And so all the initial objections we would get in that space have now been eliminated. Now, what that's done on our side is it's, we talk about squeezing the balloon, right? You squeeze this in. Okay, we just got rid of all those issues. Now, what did it create over here?
Yeah.
Well, we get a lot of part-time. Hey, I want to do this part-time. I want to do this at night. It's like, oh.
The commitment levels are, yeah.
Yeah, that's part-time effort is going to get you part-time results. And I would say in this industry, it feels like part-time efforts is going to get you a fraction of the results that you're getting full time. I just don't know if you can work 2 hours a night and
run a successful staffing. Yeah.
Replace your income.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could you make a good part-time income doing that? Probably. But could you replace your income and get to that point where everybody, it's the purple squirrel or the unicorn out there, which is, I want to start part-time. And as soon as my part-time income replaces my full-time income, then I'll quit my full-time job.
Yep.
Okay, great. That sounds awesome in theory, but the likelihood of that happening, unless you have somebody in the industry or you have a great contact that says, hey, you go start your own thing and I'll throw orders at you, which does happen. I think it's hard for somebody to think that they'll put in a couple hours a night and replace a six-figure income.
And so the economics change from, the entry point. How do the economics change in terms of scaling it? Like, have you guys any experiences or results, things that are different, people that are listening to this thinking, oh, that's a cool idea. Like, maybe I want to participate in that. What does it look like?
You're talking about entry level costs?
Yeah. Like I think you talked about what the startup costs are, but what are some of the outcomes you expect to see from this type of model, and how does it impact the overall economic model for you guys from a franchise perspective?
What our theory is if you look at the industry and you look at, let's say you look at a healthcare office, and let's say a healthcare office on average produces $1 million in revenue per one FTE. So five FTEs, you're doing 5 million, seven, et cetera, et cetera. What we would hope to see from that is if you're running a single office, a single virtual office by yourself, then maybe you should be able to produce at that same level because you have our back office. You're not having to worry about, it'd be one thing if you tried to do it on your own and then you also have to manage the payroll and the work comp and the insurances and the financing and all those other components. But honestly, somebody could come in here that, let's say they've been doing recruiting for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, and they're the top performer where they're at today. And all they did was move over to us. And what would the difference be? Why couldn't they replicate that same amount of productivity out of their home?
If they don't have to worry about any of the, it's the same job, same recruiting job. They're not having to take on the other. I mean, there's probably some other elements, but maybe not at the scale that it is when you're committing to a full-time office and scaling that up as well.
Right.
So really, really cool. It's an innovative concept. Do you know of anybody else in the franchise space doing anything like this? I have not seen or heard of it.
No, not on the contract or temporary side.
Yeah.
Now you have the direct hire folks. There's a handful of those people out there that, allow for virtual models, but it's, it's executive search, it's direct hire. Nobody that I'm aware on the contract or temporary side.
That's awesome. I love it. And I know we're digging deep into some of the innovative areas of the franchise model that you guys are dipping your toes into. One of the other concepts that we talked about that was exciting to talk about on the show is the idea of this Nexit. Could you kind of walk us through what that is and how that works?
Yeah. So I don't know. It's just kind of in our DNA over here of always looking at what's working and what's not, or what are the gaps in the industry itself. And one for us that's been around for the day that we sold ours 20 years ago was the exit possibilities in this industry. Now, I have seen, including myself, I have seen people come in and start with minimal funds and exit with seven figures in a matter of 4 or 5 years. I have personally done that. I've had franchisees that have done that. I know friends that have done that. So it is absolutely possible to do that. But when you look at a large sector of the industry and where they lie in terms of revenue and where they lie in terms of EBITDA, you end up getting them into kind of this no man's land where they're too small for professional buyers. They're too small for private equity. They're too small for, you know, somebody, and they may be even too small for a strategic buyer unless you're fulfilling some niche, right? Yep. If you're like, I do commercial staffing and I do $3 million a year and I am making, you know, $250,000 in EBITDA, that's a lot different than saying, hey, I do oncology staffing and, you know, some niche that somebody goes, that would be a great add-on. So anyway, they fall into this no man's land where just they're not real desirable from
an actor perspective,
a buyer standpoint. And so they end up going out. I've talked to a lot of the brokers in our industry about this concept prior to launching it. And there's a handful of them that if you don't have an enterprise value of $1 million or more, they're going to refer you on to Biz Buy Sell or something like that. Because it's just, it's not worth the time and energy and money it takes. It's actually harder to sell those than it is to sell larger ones, right? So anyway, so you get somebody, let's say they're doing 250 in EBITDA, and somebody puts a 3x multiple on it. You got $750,000 in enterprise value. They go try and put it on Biz Buy Sell or even a strategic buyer, and they're offered 50% cash, 50% earnout. You deduct taxes, any fees that you have to pay, legal fees, broker fees, et cetera, capital gains. And what are you left with? If you're used to making $250,000 a year, that's not going to replace your income. That's not enough to retire. I hope you have other investments outside of your business, but we all know a lot of people that don't have a lot outside their business. So now they're stuck. And so you see this aging demographic in staffing where some of these folks are sticking around a long time and they're not keeping up with technology. They're not keeping up with the industry itself. And they just start to kind of gradually decline. And my old mentor used to say, you can only coast one way and that's downhill.
I love that.
So what we thought was, okay, there's a lot of value here, but the risk think about the risk from a strategic buyer. I got Falwell Staffing and you got two full-time employees. I'm going to buy your business. My biggest risk is that when you go off and retire, all your clients leave or they don't like me like they used to like you, et cetera. It's a big risk. That's why I'm going to offer you 50% cash. The rest is going to be an earnout. I have to protect myself. But if you could convert your operation to a franchise concept and start to back out of the day-to-day and maybe become semi-absentee and maybe eventually fully remote, which could be possible, but really the way we target it and then we want people to think about it is kind of a semi-absentee. And so we have done quite a few comparisons over the last 6 months, and we see companies that are looking to this fall into one of three buckets. Coming over to us would be, it's not feasible. They manage their business well, they manage their receivables well, they manage their back office well, they have a really tight run ship, and it's just cost prohibitive to move over as a franchise. Not going to work. The second bucket is, wow, you know what? Actually, if I get rid of my full-time payroll person, and I get rid of my factoring, and I get out of the state pools, and I do this, and I do this, and come over to you guys, it's about the same cost as I was doing it on myself. And you guys are going to do all the work. And then the third bucket is probably not as common, but we have seen them, is they are mismanaging their business so poorly that we actually save them money by coming out. I had a business in Missouri that we had looked at that was doing about $350 in EBITDA. And when we got done with it, I was like, okay, I need to run this again. I don't think this is right. They were doing $350, $400 in EBITDA. I get done the numbers and their projected EBITDA was going to be $700,000.
Oh my God.
Because they had so much
waste
and getting absolutely destroyed by their factoring company, getting destroyed by their work comp carrier, getting destroyed by their GL, they were spending almost as much in GL on their little $5 million office as we do on ours. They were getting killed.
That's crazy. Sounds like there's a few different paths where the conversion to a franchise can make sense with the idea of the Nexit or the kind of slower exit. What does that conversion process look like? What's that operationally look like?
So it's just about getting your payroll over to us.
Yep.
And if you're in Aviante, that can be quite easy. If you're not in Aviante, then it's just a matter of onboarding. But yep. You have really two aspects of it. So you got the temporary side that needs to move over. That's just a matter of, no different if you said, hey, we're gonna stop doing payroll in our own back office and we're gonna use ADP or Paychex to do it. It's the same process, right? We're just gonna do your onboarding paperwork, fill out your forms, and you're off and running. Yep.
And then they get the standardization of all of your processes, implied, trained, et cetera.
Yep, exactly. And then that's the second component is kind of the back office and the operational piece and the sales and marketing and conversion over to the brand itself. And that's another thing that a lot of people are struggling to do, especially if they're older generation, might not be keeping up with the social media, the blog, yep. The website maintenance, all the stuff that I tell our offices, this is not going to catapult your business into a $10 million office because you have the best blogs and you have the best social posts. But I think it absolutely could hurt you from a credibility standpoint if somebody looks you up and your website's 20 years old and
yeah.
You don't have a social presence, you don't have any kind of content out there. I think it doesn't help you at all to be lacking in that and not keeping up.
I mean, like base level requirements these days. So it's like you have to have modern look, feel. The digital presence matters. And you've mentioned this as the, not only like a way to exit, but you said it's like kind of shifting an agency into an annuity. So how does that work out financially?
So we have to be careful with the word. So I wanted to use that word so bad because it's essentially what we're trying to do, but I don't think.
Not the correct word for it.
Say that. So we want to basically show you how to exit without selling.
Yeah.
And again, what we strive to do is we strive for it to be, you know, hopefully within the first year. If you don't come on board and there's a savings or a break-even proposition, what we would strive to do is within that first year, bridge you to that through growth.
Got it.
And I don't think I've ever run a scenario where it's even, I'm trying to think of the word, insurmountable. Always something so super small, like, okay, David, here's the delta between what you're paying now and what you would pay if you converted. You need to add two people on assignment a month for that to pay.
Good to go. Okay.
It's always something like that. It's never like, yeah. Hey, as long as you add 47 people on assignment in the next couple of months, it'll break in. It's always some really, really small number because when you start adding up the GM over 52 weeks, our costs are not astronomical. You're already paying a lot. But my goal would be to see people get in here that really, maybe they've tried, they've looked to exit, and they just keep getting these numbers that don't make sense. And we have a calculator, an exit calculator we'll run for them. And I'd love to see some people take their number two person, or I guess their number one person that says, you know what? Yeah, I'll give them a raise. Let them start taking over and I'll become semi-absentee because a lot of these folks, you know, this is their identity, right? Especially if it's Falwell set. This is their identity, who they are. They might not want to disappear completely off the planet. They just don't want to come in every day and collect AR and banking requirements.
The day-to-day. Yeah.
They don't want to do it anymore. But could they get re-energized and re-excited about not having to do that and come in a couple hours a day or a couple days a week to keep the ball moving and train their person in charge? So I would love to see opportunity where we create a massive group of semi-absentee owners and a bunch of number twos that became the number ones. And now these people are succeeding as well. And it's kind of this generational baton
handoff. Yeah, that's great.
It'd be really cool.
And so you guys are, and you have a, you'll kind of do the math for them, say, here's what the model looks like. This doesn't make sense. This does make sense. And or this makes a ton of sense and why aren't you doing this immediately based off those three buckets?
Yeah. And so we've done two of those this year and we have a third we're talking to right now. But this is what's ironic is the whole mentality of the conversion to us was going to be targeting these folks that wanted to exit or semi-exit, et cetera. And the two conversions we've done and the one that we're looking at want to go 100 miles an hour. They didn't even look at it from an exit standpoint, which I thought was interesting that we're picking up conversions going after. They just want to tap into They want to tap into the marketing. They want to tap into, you know, a healthcare vertical. Maybe they weren't doing healthcare at all.
Yeah.
They want to tap into that.
Also bigger brand. I mean, I think that and the technology play too. I mean, the value of being part of a larger org right now, I think that it can be hard going on the smaller side right now.
We talk about that with our offices. And, you know, sometimes if you come in this industry and you're coming from the corporate world, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And so when they get their technology bill every month, I'm sure they're like, oh my God, look at what we're spending on technology.
Yeah.
And we like to reiterate to them that if you were to try and go out and replicate this on your own.
Oh gosh.
We did the math for them one time. You couldn't do it. It would be financially impossible to replicate it, but it only works because we can spread those costs over a number of offices and you get kind of the best of both worlds. You get that Fortune 500 back office engine, but you're only paying your little tiny share of it.
That's great. And 2 years from now, what's success look like for the Nexit opportunity?
For me, success would be having army's too big of a word, having a core group of evangelists that are like, Gary, you get anybody interested, you have them call me.
Yeah.
And I will tell them they absolutely need to do this because before I came to you guys, here's what my life looked like. After I came with you guys, now here's what my life looks like. You have them call me and I'll explain it to them. Having 10 or 12 of those folks. And not only that, then to see that after they stepped away and re-energized their second to see the
growth
and have them just go, dude, what do you want? Testimonial video, testimonial speech. I'll give it. This has saved my life.
Yep. So success for the people that are taking the leap and joining the brand, which is great. Absolutely. So one of the category, shift gears here and talk about the category you have to talk about on almost every podcast. I think I've had one this year where we haven't touched on it, but I always like talking about it with people who are in the weeds and doing cool things. We're going to go into AI. I know you have been, as when we talk, I think you're about as hands-on as I am, and also jumping into what's next and trying to figure out where to use it. And you've started implementing some things. Tell me a little bit about what you're doing with AI today.
So where it's at for us today right now is, give you a couple examples.
Yep.
We use AI as our intro to franchising.
Yep.
So when somebody goes, let's say they Google staffing franchise, they see NextStaff, they fill out a form, says send me information. They get an automated text from Michael, and then they get a phone call from Michael, our AI franchise assistant. And this thing, it can answer every question you can throw at it.
Love it.
Blows my mind how it works. You know, the old days of for franchising, press 1. For support, press 2. You know, this is not any of that. This is, I'm Michael, I'm your AI franchise assistant. I'm here to answer your questions. What can I help you with today? What are your startup costs? He can tell you. What can I expect to make? Tell me about your virtual model. You know, once you upload all that information, Michael does not forget any of the answers you gave it, right?
Yeah. So
it can answer all of your questions, and then it's programmed to ask you a couple qualifying questions and then decide whether or not you want to book a one-on-one call with our franchise development team. Because in franchising, this is franchising in general, I think the contact rate is under 50% of leads that come through. Because it's no different. Think about somebody looking for franchising. It's like somebody looking for a job today where 25 years, 30 years ago, you had to type out your resume, type out a cover letter, put it in an envelope, mail it off. It was very cumbersome to do that. Today, you can go on ZipRecruiter and Indeed and go apply, 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 apply. Same concept in franchising. Ooh, franchising.com. Ooh, hamburgers, lawn care, staffing, ding, ding, ding. And so we get this lead. Hey, David, it's Carrie with NextStaff. I saw you filled out a lead for our franchise. Who? What? I didn't fill that out. Well, David Falwell, right? Here's your phone number. You live at 123 Main. And so that's me. I didn't fill that out, though. From franchise.com? Oh, maybe I did. Nah, not interested. Click.
It's the quick apply of franchise.
Exactly. So 50% of the people never call you back and never reply to anything. So in franchising, you spend an enormous amount of time on that very first step of the funnel, which is just getting a hold of people. So Michael, just keep going, you know, answer your text messages, call you. So that's one use case that we're putting it in place right now. A second use case, obviously, you know, the stuff with Aviante and, you know, on the recruiting side, we're working toward that. But another, and I'm just, you know, I'm sure you get guys to talk about the normal stuff all the time.
I'll talk about
some funky stuff maybe people aren't doing. We all know the stuff that everybody else is doing. But another one that we just rolled out last week was for our salespeople. So now Michael does our franchise development inquiries. Steven is our staffing sales coach. So we have programmed Steven to act as a prospect, and we have given him probably a dozen objections, what to say, what the salesperson should respond to and make suggestions, et cetera. So now our sales staff can call 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, call a phone number, and Steven answers and says, "Hi, I'm your sales prospecting coach. First of all, how difficult do you want me to be on you today from a scale from 1 to 10? 5. Great. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you some objections. You're going to overcome those objections. At any time you can start, stop, say, try again, say, do that again, say, give me another. Talk to me like you would talk to a human being or any other coach. Give me your opening pitch whenever you're ready." It will sit there and tell you what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong, based on all the stuff that we've programmed for it. And it's fun. I've literally done this at parties before. We're sitting around somebody talking about AI. They're like, "What are you guys doing with AI?" I said, "You want to see something fun? I'll call it, put it on speaker, and just do a demo of it just because it's so cool."
That's amazing. And I know that some of this is probably secret sauce, but for what you're able to share when it comes to your tech stack and the kind of how you build it, any advice for those listening that you're open to divulging in terms of how you put these things together?
Don't do any of it. Buy a franchise. I'm just kidding.
Buy a franchise that has all the skill. We've already got it.
Yeah. You know, it's tough. I'm in one of the ASA peer groups, and that was one of our topics last month, was tech stack and where does it stop? And, you know, just using stuff because it's a shiny new lure versus what problem is this solving for me and what's my investment instead of, ooh, it's really neat.
Yeah.
So for us, I would say we are trying. We had this conversation right before we jumped on. We were trying very diligently not to just constantly throw stuff in the mix. We have a lot of stuff that's on the bench, right?
Yeah.
Sitting on the bench, we can only have so many players on the field. That idea has to sit on the bench until either this one is fully implemented and everybody's good to where we don't have to talk about it anymore, or we pull somebody off the field so somebody else can come in.
Yep.
And so, you know, we have, I would say, what you would consider most staffing offices having in terms of their tech stack, you know, your ATS with Aviante, your messaging with Sense, you guys, staffing referrals, HubSpot's our CRM. Sales and marketing side of it. So I'd say those are our big ones. And then you've got a bunch of other little ones that sprinkle in, but core technologies.
Yeah. When you guys have the mobile app too, right? And that's one of the benefits. I think that's just one of the, as a And those are expensive to have as a SMB. So that's a big add-on as well. What are some of the surprises that you've experienced? Any fun learning moments in terms of rolling this out?
On the AI side, since we're using the same company, somewhere along the line, the two AI agents, or the sales AI agent, got blended in with the franchise agent. And so when we were doing a demo, when we first started this, and it would say, give me your opening script. And I'll tell you, I'd give my opening script. They'd give an objection. I would overcome that objection. They'd give me another objection. And we couldn't figure out if it was a word, if it was a phrase, but something would trigger it to move to franchise mode. It would start asking us franchise questions.
Yeah.
So if you were to invest in a franchise, do you think your startup costs? We're like, wait a minute, what? But the great part about it is that you can say, hey, Steven, you know what? You got off track. Let's start over.
Yep.
Or repeat another thing. But that was one where it took us a couple iterations with the team to say, hey, why is this crossing over? And I don't know if it was the word next staff. And then it went, oh, wait, I got to do franchise.
Yeah.
And it was kind of bizarre to catch that. Couple. And then every once in a while, and we don't know how it happens, is a franchise candidate will get our sales phone number. It's not published. We still can
By the end of it, they're working with their customer.
And you know, we can go on the dashboard and we can hear the calls because it records them all, and you'll hear something. Yeah. What? I don't understand why I'm asking. What questions are you asking me? And I'm like, oh no, how did this happen? So it's not without, you know, a little bit of consequence. But our goal is, as all technology, right? You hope the good far outweigh the bad, and those issues are few and far between. But
yeah, it is crazy the precision you need to have when you get into agentic workflows and, you know, large system prompts. The detail to avoid the hallucinations, to avoid the problem areas. I'm months and months into it, and I'm just always amazed at how far you have to go into it. And you know, it's fun stuff to dig into, but it's not a one and done type of build.
and we fully expect, no different than if I were training a brand new franchise sales guy tomorrow, and I just dumped 8 hours of information in his head, a week later he's going to retain 15% of that. And I'm going to have to retrain him. And I'm going to listen to one of his calls, and he's going to say the startup costs are between 22 and 72,000. I'm like, where did you get that number? You know, that would happen with a human being. So to think that I could just upload it to AI and be done forever, we don't have that fantasy. But we just hope it's less than that.
And
you just got to keep an eye on it. And so we go in and we monitor calls and listen for that kind of stuff. I do frequent call-ins, and I try and stump it. I try and ask just weird questions, and I think I throw it off just to see if something crazy comes out. Because it's one thing for our salespeople to call, and if it freaks out, hallucinates, does whatever, that's one thing. It's another thing if a franchise candidate calls and it says, hey, well, how much can I make in this business? Oh, you could make up to $10 million a year in this business. What are my startup costs? Startup costs are free. That could cause me a lot of problems.
Unlimited annuity.
I could get in a lot of trouble from the FTC for that. So that one had the penalty for failure on that one is much higher. As part of the underwriting and the prompting, you know, have very, very clear, do not say, do not, very clear, cannot answer these questions, or here is the exact wording. Do not vary from the script whatsoever. If somebody says, how much can I make, or any of that stuff, you can't vary from that script. So
that's great. That's great. Well, it's fun to hear the unique use cases on that. Do you have any perspective on the most overhyped AI and or the most underhyped AI use cases in terms of where it's going and what you think it will replace, whether in staffing or outside of staffing?
Let's see. Overhyped, I would say believing that AI will take over the recruiting, screening, and hiring component of companies. That, I mean, it's just to think that someday all you're going to do is just have AI screen candidates, interview candidates, and then say, here's our two recommendations. I don't think that's not at least anywhere near the future. Because at some point, you're also going to have the other side of the equation, which is the candidates. They're using AI as well. And so now you got your AI talking to your AI. And who are you really getting?
Yep.
You're not going to uncover that, I don't believe, at least the way it sits right now. So I do think very, very much so, like on the recruiting side, the very front end of that funnel, like, you know, we get 500 applications a week. That's a lot of people to try and get in touch with. And, you know, they're at work. And so they can't call you back until the evening. So that is where I think you can really benefit and use AI to your advantage. But having it select and all that stuff, I don't think that's going to be the case.
Yeah.
So I would say from an overhype of, oh my God, AI is going to end up doing all the hiring, I don't think that's going to be the case.
All right.
Underhyped. I'll just pick one that I'm working on. And then I think, well, should I talk about this or not? So I am following the Optimus rollout closely because I don't see why in my staffing model that somebody couldn't call up and say, hey, this is what I'm looking for. And we say, would you like a person or would you like a humanoid? Which would you like? Well, really? Well, what's the difference? Oh, tell me about either. Well, this is, you're obviously going to get a person, and here's where this would be more beneficial for you. Humanoid, you know, if you have mundane tasks, monotonous stuff, dangerous stuff, you know, that might be a better fit. I don't know why our industry won't be at the forefront of that. And if Optimus will let me sign up for 1,000 of those today, I'd probably sign up for 1,000 of them.
I love it. I mean, it's, you know, it sounds like far-fetched, like the future when you talk about it, because it doesn't exist today. But then you look, I mean, I don't know if you've ridden in a Waymo, but I was in San Francisco a few weeks ago and, you know, getting picked up in a car, driven in a car, nobody's in it, just me, your phone turns on immediately. It's an amazing experience. It's an incredible experience. They're coming to Denver here in January. And years ago, that wasn't, you know, I was like, oh, that's never going to happen. And, you know, now we have Tesla's supposedly be able to rent your own car out and monetize your car at some point. We'll see if that, when or how that pans out, but we are moving in that direction. So, and so the Optimus, actually, I'm not familiar with that robot specifically. Is that the leading one right now?
That's the Tesla.
Oh, that's the Tesla. Okay.
Yep. We're still, I think 26 is when they will kind of begin full scale production and when you could actually get a volume of them, maybe 27, but, you know, I watched Tesla closely. I watched their shareholder annual meeting last week because I want to hear where Elon's head is and where he's going, but he believes Optimus will be something that you've never seen before in terms of talking about having a billion of these in the market. He goes, everybody will have one. And he goes, I think everyone will have, it'll be very inexpensive, $25,000. Everybody have one. And he even went so far as he said, I don't see why, you know what? You have two choices. You can go to jail or we can put you on parole and we're going to sign an Optimus to you to make sure you don't violate the law. That's why I like listening to Elon. I mean, he's thinking of stuff like that where it's just like, well, I never would have thought of that. But
that's wild.
So, I mean, you know, think about it, even in your household.
Yeah.
You know, if you could call up and rent an Optimus for a day for $150 and it could clean your house, mow your lawn, walk your dog, do all the stuff for you for a fraction of the cost of going out and finding all these other people to do it, cook your meal. But I think in industry, you know, especially some of the, I see the warehouses that they can't do the full automation. They're doing widgets in a box and they could automate for $250,000 or $500,000. You know what? Why don't I try this Optimus thing I'll do five of them for 90 days on a temporary assignment.
Yeah.
And if it works, then I'll buy my own.
Rent tone, staff tone. That path is, it's crazy to think about. And I know I always have friends asking, like, do you think they're just assuming like AI is overhyped, you know, and we might be in a financially hyped bubble, but I also think that the impact is likely underestimated in the long run. I think it's hard to fathom what is going to happen with this. Similar to, you know, the internet had somebody was talking the other day and they're like, you know, the internet had the bubble, but it also had a whole bunch of products out there that had no revenue. They had no revenue.
No revenue, no earnings.
No earnings at all. And that's a problematic. A lot of the things that are happening right now, they're tied to revenue. They've got, when you look at the OpenAI and the Claude, they're making a lot. They're just investing simultaneously. So definitely interesting times. So
yeah, kind of pulling it back. I think our industry will be very interesting in 2030. I mean, the level of AI and its sophistication and its capacity is going to blow people's minds.
Yes.
Then when you start looking at the Tesla semis that'll be on the road, you're going to see fleets of these things going down the road with nobody in them and are 10 times safer than the average driver. You're going to have cars that have no steering wheels. I mean, it is literally going to be like the future. And then you're going to have staffing offices here where I've got candidates walking in the door to fill out applications, and I've got 10 optimists standing in a closet being charged. It's going to be the Jetsons. Yeah. You know, that absolutely could be. That could be your front desk person. You know, hi, the next app. Come on in. Here's where you sit down or whatever. It's an exciting time to be in business because I think you're going to see some major transformations in the next 5 years that are just going to absolutely blow people's minds. And you're going to see some industries that I think we don't even know yet, we haven't even thought of yet, that 5 years from now, we'll be employing hundreds of thousands of people that we were like, that wasn't even an industry 5 years
ago. I know. It is wild. What any near-term forecasts for the staffing industry, AI or non-AI? I know we've talked about a lot of kind of the futuristic things. What are some of the things if you're agency owner listening to this? What do you think is going to happen? What do you think should be top of mind for them over the next few years?
I am optimistic, and I think staffing people in general are this way, but I'm optimistic for 2026. I think what we started seeing about August on the commercial side and a little bit of uptick, we finally got some, you know, interest rates coming down. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we can just check the tariff box once and for all, and let's stop messing around with that. Hopefully near or close to the end of the year, we can put all that stuff to bed and have 2026 really be a boom for the industry. I think more on the commercial side, healthcare is healthcare, right? It's the needs there. It's not going away. The shortages are here to stay for a while. Technology is the one that's going to be intriguing to me because I think you're going to see this weird shift in, oh, we need programmers. And I mean, AI is going to solve that in a hurry, but now you're going to need a bunch of other people that stuff they're doing with data, these massive data warehouses, the energy sector. I think if I was trying to place a bet in staffing right now, I think I would be anywhere in energy infrastructure.
Yeah.
Engineering, construction, whatever. I think you could not go wrong in the foreseeable future, anything around energy infrastructure.
Absolutely.
So I would think healthcare will maintain, hopefully grow in 26. Commercial, I'm very optimistic commercial will grow significantly in 26. And I think technology will grow, but it may offset where you may see a big reduction in some of these AI-filled stuff, but an increase over here. And some of that increase may drip over into kind of the engineering sector, you know, if you kind of lump that in there. But I would expect that to just absolutely go crazy next year.
Yeah, Absolutely. And jumping over to the speed round, what is the best piece of business advice you've ever received and who gave it to you?
Do what you said you were going to do. One of my early mentors in the finance business.
Love it.
But we were involved in a transaction here recently that I think we want to modify that to do what you said you were going to do when you said you were going to do it.
Ooh, all right.
Now you could argue that do what you said you were going to do encapsulates that, right? Hey, if I said I'm going to call you on Friday, yeah, do what you said you were going to do. But I don't know if we're going to extend it or not, but that is a mantra. I don't know what it was about that that stuck with me, and I have lived by that. I have drilled that into my kids' heads and anybody else around me is like, just do what you said you were going to do. And that will take care of not only to other people, but for yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, if you said you were going to lose weight, then do it. If you said you were going to eat healthy, then do it. If you said you were going to start going to the gym at 6 o'clock, then do it. Yeah. Right. Just do what you said you were going to do. That will take care of a lot of stuff in your life.
Leaders at GE Lighting, it's a say-do ratio. That was what he measured you on. That was it. Same thing. I love it. You could go back and give advice to yourself when you first started in staffing, what would it be?
Well, for me, kind of like we talked about, is don't open 10 offices in 18 months. That would be something I would not replicate.
Yeah.
I would say don't diversify too quickly, meaning it's so easy that you get one leg of your business going and it's so easy to say, oh, now that we got this going, let's jump into technology. Let's jump into this and let's buy a direct hire business and let's do all this stuff. And, you know, let's open another location. And all of a sudden, 5 years later, you've got a bunch of other people, places, everything, and not a lot more to the bottom line or the top line because you didn't get it to the point where it was self-sustaining. You got it to the point where it was making money and it was good, but it wasn't impenetrable.
Yep.
And so then you went over here and while this one was going up, this one came down a little bit. Then you went over here, this one came up and these two went down a little bit. That would probably be my best advice is find a niche and stick to it and just be the biggest, baddest SOB in the country to where somebody looks at you and goes, what? You're doing $25 million in that little niche with 30% margins?
Yeah.
Yep. And I do it out of a 500 square foot office with two people. Boom.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah. Awesome. And any closing comments for the audience?
I would say you better keep up. Not in a bad way, not meaning go throw money at a bunch of crap. But I mean, I sit there and I talk to, you know, business leaders like you every week in different segments of the market, and to see some of the thoughts that are going on and where people's heads are at and what they're doing, I think you could age yourself really quickly in this industry. In the next 5 years, you could be somebody that you're not even valuable anymore because you're so far behind to bring you into NextApp or, you know, some strategic buyer. They're going to look at you and go, it'd be easier for us just to do it ourselves.
You're
too far behind. I don't know. Or I'm going to discount you very heavily because I have a lot of lifting to do to get you up to where we're at.
Yeah, I second that. I asked AI the other day for a salary range on a job, and it said, well, are they using AI or not? And I was like, if they're advanced in AI, worth it. If not, 30% haircut. So.
My stepson is a senior at Arkansas, and we were down there about a month ago, and we were talking about AI. And the kids, I was blown away. They're really not that into. I figured they'd be using it to do homework and everything. They're like, well, no, we really can't because they can kind of tell. But we're like, but just other things, you know, and giving you some ideas on what to write. And they weren't really. I said, man, you better get on it because the older people are feet first in it right now. So
yeah, absolutely. And last question is, where can people find you? Where can they learn about NextStaff, Nexit, Homebase?
Yeah, when it comes to the franchise model, we have nextstaff-franchise.com. NextStaff is NETXAFF. And our client and talent site is nextstaff.com.
Awesome. Gary, thanks so much for joining today. I really enjoyed the conversation as always.
Absolutely, Dave. It's always fun to talk to you.
Thanks for listening to The Staffing Show. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter at staffinghub.com to never miss an episode. Until next time.